right, so we are in a series of messages. Actually, I've been telling you that it's not a series of messages, right? It's not a series. It's actually a love story to us from the Lord, from His kingdom, about what family looks like. And that God didn't just give us one family, He actually gave us two. And that's good news because some of you don't like your own family, right? Like the family that God gave you, you're like, could you have like upgraded that somehow? Like that's not the family you chose, right? Good news is this. We have a family that you get to choose. And that's the family that we are in right here. Here's what's crazy about both of those families. You can't have one without having the other. There's a tune about that, right? But there's the reality is that both of these families work together. They're symbiotic. They come together. And one will help the other, and the other one will help the other. It goes together like peanut butter and jelly. That's exactly how both these families work. And the second family, the one that you are in today, is what God would say is the ideal family. There's an ideal family. And then how many of you know, like, there's this ideal of what family looks like, but you have a real family, right? Your family, like, real to you might be, I've gone through a divorce, and it was extremely painful. In fact, real to you might be, hey, I'm on my fifth relationship in college, and I still can't find a man, or vice versa. Like, your idea of family, your idea of relationships is the fact that you might have that kid, that child that was so awesome when they were two. But when they become teenagers, they become the epitome of what we call the prodigal son or the prodigal daughter. And you're just begging them to come home. Maybe real family to you looks like the fact that you're on your second marriage and it doesn't even come close to as good as you thought it should have been. Like, this is the way it goes, doesn't it? This is the way relationships work. And family somehow seems to be the very thing that we look at. And now, in our culture, rather than just try to do something to repair those relationships, what we do is we minimize them. And, like, we begin to say things like, let's just mill over this. Everybody goes through this. Everybody goes through this. So let's not worry about it. Let's not try to repair the marriage or the relationship, whatever it is. Maybe you are one of those that your family is like, you had that first kid. And that kid, that child was amazing. So quiet and just went to sleep at the right times, ate perfectly. Like, everything just seemed to be so good. And, like, you got in the car and they fell asleep. And then you came home and you could, like, pull them out of the car seat and lay them down. And you're like, this is a perfect child. And then you had the second. And it's almost like God had this sense of humor saying, yeah, you thought that's the way it was. Like, I'm just going to show you. Like, every kid's different. And so every relationship that we march into in our families changes the relationship. Do you know that when you have a child, it changes your home? Have a second one, it changes your home again. Have a third one, it changes your home again. And then later, when they get old enough to get married, it changes your relationships in your home again. And as I said last week, it's almost as if the further we get in life, the more complicated it gets. Don't you wish you could just go back to your three-year-old self and say, I just need something to eat, and if you could put a show on for me like VeggieTales, I'd be happy. Doesn't seem to work that way, does it? So the last few weeks, I've been asking you questions at the beginning, like your meet and greet question was like, what is that TV family that you say, man, I would totally identify with that family? Mine was Different Strokes. Mr. Drummond, I just wish he was my dad, because he lived in like this rich penthouse in New York. Like, I had this problem with that stuff. And on top of that, his daughter was beautiful, and I thought, man, she could be my sister. I would give her hugs a lot, right? Like, that's exactly what I... So that's like the ideal family for me growing up was the Drummond family. And we know how those kids turned out, right? From the 80s child stars, how they ended up turning out. So we have this ideal family. And as I was thinking about it over the last couple weeks, who is the ideal family that has been in my life that if you saw a video of their life, you would look at and say, that's not my life. that family looks perfect. And so I have this family, these friends of mine in Northern California, Anthony and Julie. Say hi to Anthony and Julie because they're going to listen to this week. They miss you. You should move here, Anthony and Julie. You should. This couple, when they were dating, I started to really build a relationship with them, and then he proposed to her, and we had these really great sessions in premarital counseling. And here's what I found out with them: they never argued. Like, they never had a fight. And I remember asking Anthony the day of their wedding in the side room of the church we were in, and I asked him, I said, "How you doing?" And he just goes, "Oh man, I think I'm panicking a little bit. It's a little stressful. It's really hot in here." And I said, "Yeah, you know, it's a fight, isn't it?" And he goes, "A fight? We've never had one." And I said, "You will. You will. You will. Because life is hard when you get married. Life gets difficult when you build that relationship in that place." So anyways, I started to think about it, and I called Anthony yesterday, and I said, "Anthony, you put together all these videos of your family vacation over the summer." Now, this was a family vacation for the ages, and that's actually what they called it. They spent time, money, planning, and years of planning to actually say, "We're going to go on a trip for an entire month with our two little girls, and we're going to take them to China and Thailand. We want to show them the world. We want to get them on elephants and petting tigers and going through the jungles and eating different foods. We want them to experience life." Check out this video. You look at that video and you go, "That's crazy." 1 month they spent in Asia as a family. And so I called him yesterday and I said, "Can I please show that video? Because that's kind of like the ideal video." And he goes, "Oh, yeah." He goes, "By the way, that's the highlight reel. We spent a month, and what you get is 1 minute of like amazing things," right? He goes, "For a month." He said, "What people don't know is the exact same tantrums that we would have." And I said, "You mean your wife?" And he said, "Like, no, like we as a family, these tantrums that we would have in Target in Roseville, California, we were having in a really 5-star restaurant in China. The same exact stomach issues that you got from eating the wrong type of food always seemed to happen," and he told me, he said, "in the pool. I can just tell you," like he said, "it was a nightmare, like it was a struggle, it was a constant fight. We had to fight for what we knew would be the story of our lives. We had to work hard for it, and we had to plan for it." And he said that there was this moment, the Great Wall of China, he said they're riding the bus, and one of his daughters fell asleep. And he said she was so out, she was so tired, she was so beat. And he said, "I just didn't know what to do, but I did not want her to miss the moment. So we get off the bus, and she won't wake up. I'm shaking her. I'm moving her. I'm doing whatever I can. So I did only what a good father would do. I poured water all over her head." And he said, "You should have seen the looks of all the other people around us, like he's torturing his child." Right? And what he said is, what you are seeing is the highlight reel, but in reality, there are lowlights. There's tough stuff that goes on in family, and if it wasn't for the tough stuff, you wouldn't be who you are. And so I asked him, I said, "Hey, would you just give me a quote that would summarize your trip?" This is his quote. Great things come with hard work, intentionality, and sacrifice. We are always trading one thing for another, whether we know it or not. So there's always a trade-off in all that we do. It's not easy to do anything that we do, but it's so worth any of the obstacles we face. Anthony. He said that trip was the hardest trip we've ever, if you've ever traveled with small children, try doing it for a month. But he said, to this day, it'll be our best trip in history. They're coming here at Christmas. You know what they're going to do now? They let their girls plan their Christmas trip. They're coming to Colorado to take their girls dog sledding because that's what they wanted to do. So they're going dog sledding, and they're hoping to visit our church on a Sunday in December, so you'll get to meet them then. But your real family forms you. It forms you. But it's the real transitions in life. It's the tension. It's the struggles. It's the fights. It's the thing that we have to actually work hard for. Those are the things that transform you. Now, last week, I gave it to you just like this. I said, one family forms you. The other one transforms you. Well, that sounds really nice, but how do you get transformed? Well, you get transformed through life's toughest stuff. That's what shapes us the most. Isn't that right? We tell our children this. Oh, you know what? You did really good. I know that was tough out there on the soccer field today, and you hurt your leg and this and that, but don't worry. You're going to be a better player for it. And then mom and dad go home, and like, why are we doing this, right? You know, why is life so hard? So we have this struggle where we teach our children the very values of what it means to transition into that plan of life, that ideal life. But when it comes down to it, it's real, isn't it? And when life gets real, There's an answer for it. Jesus actually comes into our life and he shows up and he says, I got something better. I got an ideal life for you. I got something that's going to actually build and grow your children, your family, and your life. Aren't you glad Jesus actually gave us an ideal life rather than the one that you have? Question is, are you willing to let him give it to you? Are you willing to let him love you through it? Are you willing to submit yourself to his authority? So Jesus comes along, and he kind of doesn't make this family life idea easier. In fact, he doesn't even make the Christian life idea easier. In fact, for years, there was a religion that said, if you do this, 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 and this, you got it. You're good to go. And Jesus says, no, like, I just want you to know, you've heard it said this, but I'm going to tell you this. You've heard it said this about marriage, but I'm going to tell you this. You've heard it said this about looking after another woman and being with another woman, but I'm going to tell you that if you even look at her, you're wrong. Like, Jesus actually suddenly takes the game of the ideal and doesn't just actually raise the standard. He jacks it up so high that I can't even achieve it, that you can't achieve it. Now, you might have these moments where you're like, man, I think I'm hitting all cylinders here, and then just when you say that is when you start to fall. Because the reality is, like, we struggle for the ideal, and Jesus is always saying to us this. There is a tension between the real and the ideal, and I want you to deal with the tension. The tension will not be removed because I showed up. I just want to be in your life in the tension. Getting to the ideal. Jesus taught, and he pointed us to an ideal family, but listen to me, here's the thing. He absolutely refused to condemn anyone who didn't achieve it. So this is good news for you and I. If you're struggling as a father or as a mother, if you're struggling as a sibling or a sister, brother, aunt, uncle, grandparent, maybe your life, your family life has some strife in it, don't worry. Because there is grace for you. And that's what he came for. There is a standard that he has set, but he's actually given you grace to continue to strive and to achieve it. He actually powers himself down from his standard, meets us at our level so that he can power you up to the ideal that he has set for you. It is only by his grace, it is only by his generosity, it is only by his love, it is only by his ability and his power to actually get you to move from real to ideal. You don't have him, you will always fight for an ideal that you can't achieve or even come close to. And we're all called to live with that tension. So here's the big idea. God didn't give you one family, he gave you two. The real one formed you. The second one transforms you. And last week, we looked at Colossians 3, and we're going to review Colossians 3 for a moment. We're going to read through these passages we looked at last week, and here's why. Because this is not a series of messages individually. This is one message over 4 weeks. It's one letter. It's one love letter to our church. And it's one letter to your family, both families. So these passages lead into the one that the key passage that I want to get to today. There's two key passages. One is in Colossians and the other one is Ephesians. So you can turn to Colossians 3 if you have your Bibles this morning and look on YouVersion. You can grab the notes there if you'd like. Go to the events page and find the notes there. But we're going to be looking at Colossians 3. We're going to be looking at Ephesians 5, 21 and 22. And then we're going to close out with Romans, and we're going to finalize this morning's message with Romans chapter 5. So here's the thing about Colossians 3. Here's the thing about Jesus' advice. Jesus comes onto this planet, and he begins to shift the entire ideal of how to live completely. Like, he moves everything from a hierarchical system, from a place where there's manpower. He moves us from a place where there's one man who makes all the decisions. There's one man who has all the power. It's called, in current culture, in leadership culture, it's called the great man theory. And we have lived in the great man theory of leadership for years and years and years. And even non-believers today in leadership circles are saying, hey, there's a better idea about leadership. It doesn't have to be about one person. In fact, community, unity, team building, the family, coming together and treating. And so what you're seeing in workplaces is workplaces that don't have individual offices. You guys seen this? They have one massive room and tables, and everybody sits at the same tables. They don't have cubicles anymore. In fact, they've removed cubicles. They've had one lunchroom everybody goes to, and they will give you whatever you need. And here's why. They don't want you to leave. In fact, they have workout centers. Google started all this stuff, right? And they believe that if they can keep you there and get you to believe that you are family in your office place, the corporation will actually flourish. Funny, because I look at that and I go, you did not make this up. This is Jesus. Jesus said, if you can actually hang out together, if you can actually build relationships together, he started with 12 guys and they changed the world, right? So he begins to come in and say, this is what the new kingdom looks like. This is how it's going to operate. And suddenly everybody, in fact, all the disciples started to think about this, and it gets to Paul and Peter, and they start saying things like this. Okay, well, that's the kingdom, but what we're finding is these little church ecclesias, these family groups, are becoming divided. There's infighting. There's struggles with relationships. In fact, there's adultery going on. In fact, people are actually drinking way too much wine during communion. It's not going well. The church is falling apart. Is it possible that what Jesus was actually teaching us, how can that actually be applied at church? Oh, it does work. It can work. And that's when they started to call the church a family. So in Colossians 3, follow with me. Here we go. It says this. Since God chose you, everybody look at your neighbor and say, you. He chose you. Say it. Don't you love it when I do that? Eventually, we're going to be so comfortable looking at each other and saying stupid stuff that you're going to say, man, this is awesome. I love this. He's going to tell us to tell you something really dumb again. He chose you. He chose you. He chose you, 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 you. So he says he chose you to be holy people that he loves. So now turn to your neighbor and say, he loves you and so do I. I actually saw which couples are fighting this morning. I can tell which ones were fighting. My mom and dad couldn't even look at each other, so they must be arguing. I'm just kidding. So he says, you must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. My good buddy, Nick Petrak, who was just up here, sent me a screensaver this last week. that has a shirt that has all those things on it. It says, clothe yourselves in these things. And I said, what's this? And he said, I just put it on my screen so I can remember it all day long, every day. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? But here's the thing. This is how it works. So he says, clothe yourselves. In fact, Eugene Peterson says, God has picked out a wardrobe for you. Go use the one he chose for you. Last week, Pinterest lookbook. There's a spiritual lookbook for you. You don't have to get up and wonder what you should wear. Go check it out. He's given you everything to put on. Right? Made this one a little better, I promise. I think. Can't get this one off. Why do I feel like Mr. Rodman? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Day to be a neighbor. Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Hi, neighbor. That was weird, wasn't it? But look at this. I'm just telling you. I should get some cheers here. I'm just saying. 1992. I'm not going to breathe because you're going to lose your eye. Right? Hey, not bad. I'm just telling you. Not bad. Do you know why I get to wear this? The very first time I put this on, I achieved nothing to get it. All I did was sign an oath. All I did was put my hand in the air and say, I will do this. I'll give my life. It was a promise to say, I will submit myself to our country. I'll protect it and defend it. But you want to know why I have these ribbons? I didn't really do any of them. Because by association, I was given these things. I have a commendation medal that my entire unit got. I was actually sitting on vacation in California for a month when we did that. I still got the medal. All this stuff that I have is because somebody else said, I'm going to help, and I'll give my life for it. I'll sacrifice my life in order to make it happen. Jesus actually says, I sacrificed my life for you. Guess what you get to do? By association to me, all you have to do is wear it. All you have to do is wear it. All you have to do is put it on. Mercy, compassion, tenderness, kindness, humility. He said, pick the wardrobe that I have picked out for you. Dress yourself every day in this. When I put this on the other day, in a really weird way, I got emotional. Because I'm proud of what happened. I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud of serving. Proud of giving my life to something that meant something. But verse 13 says this, make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone. Everybody say anyone. That means, allowance means what? It means set aside, pre-plan, predetermine that you are going to go into any relationship no matter what the relationship looks like. And if that person offends you, you are going to make allowance for their faults. That has nothing to do whether you like them or not. That you are called to love them whether you like them. And you love them by actually giving them grace. The best way to love anyone is to put that on them. So when I put this on, there's one thing about putting this on myself, but another thing that Jesus actually calls us and Paul calls us to actually say, go and dress somebody else up. Go put it on them. Don't just wear it. Go live it out. Go give it to somebody. Make them look good. Put it on someone else. Let them wear the honor. Let them wear the humility. Let them wear the forgiveness. Let them wear the grace and the mercy. Let them wear me. And you do it by your actions. You do it by your love. You do it by your care for one another. So he says, make allowance for your faults. Forgive anyone who offends you. Remember the Lord forgave you and must forgive others. Verse 14, above all, as if the other stuff wasn't even that important. He's saying, above all, above everything, even over all that stuff that I just told you, he says, above all, clothe yourselves with what? Love. That love binds us together in perfect harmony. And I ended the service last week with this tune, and I sang, and it didn't sound very good. And then when you sang, you don't sound very good either. But together, we sound pretty amazing. No one in here's cutting an album anytime soon, last time I checked. Nobody's on the top 10 of the Billboard charts. I think my daughter could be, but I'm a little biased, right? I think Jake could be, but I'm a little biased. No, he couldn't. I'm kidding. But you know what Jake wears well? Wears love really well. Really well. Really well. He will put that on you. He will clothe you and make you look better. Let the message of Christ, which is the love of Christ, this is what it is. Christ is love, therefore, let the message of Christ, putting this on people in all its richness, fill your lives, teach and counsel each other with all the wisdom he gives. Love is wisdom. And this is how it plays out. Start worshiping. Start singing songs like we are family. Start dancing together. Start singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. So notice that he didn't just say hymns. Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Like this is, he said, sing whatever's on your heart. Sing whatever it is that is inside of you. Make sure you lip it out. Make sure you give it everything you have. Raise your hands and give God glory for what he's actually doing in your life. And be thankful in your hearts for everything that he has done in your life. Here's the key passage. And whatever you do, whatever you do, whatever you do. You know what that means? Last time I checked, it means this, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you drink, whatever you, wherever you work, how you work, whatever you do, it doesn't matter what it is. Do it with this in mind, worship. Whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus Christ. You are wearing the coat. You represent. Giving thanks to him through God the Father, right? So then he goes on and he says, okay, so there it is. That's how we're going to do it. I want to actually address you individually. I'm going to get real personal. It's going to get real in the room. Here we go. This is what it says in Colossians 3:18. Everybody say wives. Wives. Why did the first one say wife was this guy right here? Wives! Right? Okay. We'll get to that in just a second. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to those who belong to the Lord. There's a really key word in there, and it's not submit. It's called as is fitting. There's three. Fitting to who? Those who belong to the Lord. Submit because the church needs to see it. Submit is just another word for saying, I give myself to you. All that I am, I give my life to you. It's called a wedding vow, right? That's all it is. Now listen to this. Husbands, love your wife. And be willing to die for her. Pretty much, that's what he says. Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly. Verse 20, children, obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, funny how he has to talk to that guy again. Do not aggravate. One of your translations actually uses the word exasperate. I thought that meant like asphyxiate. No, I'm just kidding. It's like, don't choke your kids out. Like, don't aggravate your children. And here's why. Because your children become discouraged. So here is the gospel summary. The gospel summary can actually be summarized in those verses right there. Those verses I just read to you is the gospel in real life, family life, everyday life. So here's the summary of it. Wives, submit to your husbands. Number two, husbands, love your wives. Number three, fathers, encourage your kids. Number four, kids, obey your parents. And some of you are looking at that and going, are you kidding? You haven't met my wife, right? Some of you are going, have you met my husband? He's not really that loving. Have you met my kids? You've never met my kids. Like, you don't understand. Like, I want to love my kids. I want to encourage my kids, but they need instruction. They need to be told. They need discipline, right? And oh, you fathers, encourage your kids. Don't exasperate them. And you're looking at me going, but it's so fun to drive them crazy, right? And it is. It is like, it is so fun. But here's what you also say. You don't know my kids. They exasperate me, right? This is what we do. This is how the dynamics of family work out. Yet this, what we just seen here, is God's ideal family. It's the ideal. It's how it's meant to function. It's the redemptive way that family works. And you look at me and you go, yeah, my family, my origin of family, my family that I grew up in, my mom never submitted to my dad. My dad never loved my mom. Fathers, my dad was never encouraging. He didn't tell me he even loved me. You don't know my dad. And kids, you want me to obey my parents? They haven't said a good word to me since 1986, right? That's how we think. That's how we see. And this is why this is so important. Because this is what I want you to see. I want to tackle the very one line in there that, for a second, I want you to think about this. What one line in there would be completely politically incorrect for me to address this morning that everybody knows, everybody looks at, and especially women can't stand? Which one is it? Wives, submit to your husbands. I'm going to talk about this for a second. That's dangerous, isn't it? Yep, really, really, really dangerous. We're going to talk about it. And this is why. Because that line, wives submit to your husbands, is an absolute specific application to the wife, to the mother, that is intended to be the application for everyone. God just knew that women would model it best. Submit to your husband, submit to your family. You know what that word submit means? Love. Husbands, submit your love to your wives. Fathers, submit your encouragement to your kids. Kids, submit your obedience to your parents. It's the one word in there that everyone has to get, not one person. There is no hierarchy when it comes to submission. And there's no hierarchy when it comes to power in the family. There's no hierarchy in church leadership, just so you know. There's no one person. So if you're looking at me and you're going, oh, he's the pastor, he makes all the decisions. Absolutely not. If I actually led the way Jesus would lead, it would be the opposite. I'd be the last to go. I'd be the last one to step through the door, and I'd be the first one to open it for you. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to who? To those who belong to the Lord, which is the family, your physical family and your spiritual family. How many of you, raise your hand, were in some way, shape, or form led by your mother or a grandmother to the Lord? Raise your hand. Mom influenced you greatly in your spiritual walk. Raise your hand. Go ahead, raise them high. Now everybody look around. I think that's actually a low number because I think most of us, it would be much higher than that. Studies actually say that over 70% of people were highly influenced by a female in their life. Why? Because moms know how to submit their love to children and to their husbands. God put it in them. So why is this important? Because Jesus actually took this standard, the ideal, and he elevated it. He elevated it through this word of submission. And I'm going to call it mutual submission, because if we can all get it this morning, if we all know what it means to submit, and we all mutually submit, it is the very one thing. It is the one thing that is so gospel-centric. It is the very thing that actually we can look at and we say, this is the gospel, is when we submit to one another. Submit to one another. Paul said it, he said this, above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us together in perfect harmony. He's saying there is a new way to be unified. There is a new way to actually exercise what it means to be in God's kingdom, the church family, the physical family. So the disciples began to ask this question, what does it look like in a family? In Ephesians 5:21, turn with me there, look at this one. It's almost the exact same words to a different church. Paul had the same message to the church of Ephesus that he had to the church of Colossae. And he says this, and further, above all, you get it? Submit to one another. out of reverence for Christ. Now, that last line is really important, out of reverence for Christ. You want to know why? Because sometimes the one another's and the each other's in your life are really not worth submitting to, if you're honest. Being one of the one another's, being one of the each other's. Like, I'm a one another that it sometimes is really hard to love, ask my wife. I'm an each other that my kids sometimes probably look at and say, gosh, Dad, it's really hard to love him right now. He's so stressed out. He just seems so on edge. It's really hard sometimes to love the one another's if we're really honest, right? Because sometimes the each other's are not worthy of submitting our love to. But you know who's worthy of submitting your love to? Always Christ. Because Christ was always submitting his love to you. He never gave up on you. So the each other's are worth submitting to because we submit to them out of reverence. It becomes our coat that we wear, our honor that we give. It's the very thing that we dress somebody else up with. And we look at them and we say, I see that you're going through a struggle, but don't worry, I'm here and I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to come in humility. I'm going to come with kindness. I'm going to come with love. And I'm going to bind this whole relationship together with Christ. Not because you're worthy of it, but because Christ is worthy of me actually worshiping you through him through this relationship. Mutual submission says this. This is what it says. I will leverage my time, my talent, my resources in my life for your life. That's what mutual submission says. The future of your family, the future of this church family, depends on every person in this room powering down so that we can all power up together. I'm going to unplug so that you can plug in. I'm going to come down to the place that you need me the most so that I can give you encouragement to elevate you at your best. That's what mutual submission says. And you know who did it best? Jesus. There's this moment in this little place called the upper room. Jesus with his disciples, it's a few days before he's about ready to give up his life for their life. And there's a moment where he's sitting there and he says, all authority that has been given unto me was given to me by my Father. All authority in heaven I now have. What I'm about ready to do, I'm going to do so that I can give all that authority. How does he do it? He doesn't sit at a table and start teaching them. He doesn't sit at a table and start giving them all kinds of instructions in PowerPoint sermons and all kinds of things. You know what he does? He removes his outer cloth, he gets on his knees, and he begins to wash their feet. Their stinking feet. And when I say stinking feet, I'm telling you it was a stinking foot. Because they lived in a culture where there literally was no plumbing. There was no sewer systems. So you can imagine walking around with just a pair of Birkenstocks all day long, and you imagine what those feet looked like. And Jesus gets on his knees, and every one of these disciples is going, whoa, this is a totally different religion. You don't do this in this place. This is not the hierarchy that we're used to. The priest never gets on his knees and actually washes people's feet. In fact, we come to his level. In fact, he's sitting behind a curtain. He's behind this other room that nobody gets to see. I can't even go there. So maybe on behalf of him, I'll get to know him. Maybe he'll love me enough. He will encourage me enough. Maybe possibly I could get to God. And Jesus says, I'm actually all my authority. I'm bending to you. I'm going to break at your feet. And I'm going to worship. I'm going to worship my Father, and I'm going to clothe you. I'm going to dress you up. I'm going to actually clean your feet in such a way that he's going to look at you and he's going to say, I am here to help. The question that changes every family dynamic is this question. What can I do to help? That's all he did. I see your condition. I see where you're at. What can I do to help? So let's practice that together. Let's say it together. Count of three. One, two, three. See, you're just not even very good at it. Say it again. Say it like you actually want to do something, right? Like, did you hear that? Somebody's like, what can I do to help? Sounded a little fake to me, but hey, it works, right? Can you imagine if we asked this question here at church? Imagine what we would look like as a church. Imagine what your family would look like if you practiced this at home. I'm going to challenge you to do this once a day, every day, for the next, I don't know, eternity would work. Lauren, are you listening? I just want you to listen really closely right now. Good. But kids, listen to me. Students, young people, with parents. I don't care if you're 48 and still have parents. This is good advice because Jesus gives good advice always. Not just to followers of Christianity, of him, but actually because it's good advice for anybody. You know, you can ask this question tomorrow at work, not as a believer, not as that banner, not wearing the coat of grace. Literally go up to somebody, walk into their cubicle or at that big table in the room and look at them and say, hey, how you doing? How was your weekend? Good, good. Hey, I just wanted you to know, I've noticed you've been under a lot of stress. Is there anything I can do to help? You might be getting a raise soon if that's your boss, right? Okay, listen, kids in the room, if you ask this question once a day, just walk into the kitchen someday. Dishes are out on the counter, dishwasher's empty, just ready for those things to go in there. Why is that such a problem? I don't know. My kids are listening. So the dishes are out, and you walk into the kitchen, and you just look at your parents. You're in the room, and you just say, hey, guys, how you doing? Good. How's your day? Good. Hey, I just want to know, is there anything I can do to help? You actually might have to pick your kids up off the floor. I feel like your parents off the floor. You might actually need the paddles and do this and go, because you're going to be, mom, are you breathing? Are you in here? You want to really get some good advice? This is what you can do. Wait till they have people over and everybody's in the kitchen. Everybody's hanging out. They've got company. Walk in and say, hey, just don't mean to interject. Mom, dad, anyone in the room, just want to know, is there anything I can do to help? And you know what you do then? Just go do whatever you want to do because they're going to be shaking for the next hour. They're going to be like, and all the guests are going to look at your parents and they go, tell us how to parent. How do you do that, right? Like, you know what's going to happen, kids, if you do this? It won't be very long, but you will be running the home. You will be running the home. Wives, girlfriends, ladies, ask the question, what can I do to help? You know what your husband's going to say or your boyfriend's going to say? What can I do to help? I got it. I'm good. Right? Tough guy, right? Parents, don't keep thinking you have to instruct your kids over and over and over and over. One of the best ways to instruct your children is walk into the room and say, hey, Layton, I know you had a bad day. Junior high's tough. Had this conversation, so it's a little emotional. What can I do to help? I become a really good dad in that moment. And I become a lot like Jesus in that moment. Too often we're walking into conversations saying, what can I take from you? Not what can I give to you? Can I pull from you rather than what can I put inside of you? Men, I'm going to talk to you for just a second. This is a powerful, powerful, powerful question to ask. And it doesn't make you look weak. It makes you look really, really strong. On your way out of the house in the morning, just simply say this before you leave. Hey, babe, I'm off to work. Just want to know that I love you. Say this too, because this always works. You look beautiful today. Is there anything that I can do for you? You know who doesn't say that enough? me. This speaks right at my heart. And before you come home, a nice text message, hey, what's up for dinner? Do you need me to grab something? Here's something I can do to help you. You know what's going to happen? She's still not going to give you what you want, if you know what I mean. But she is going to be in your corner. And all of you ladies are laughing right now because you know exactly what I'm talking about. All I am for all you need for all of us. Do you want to know what the barrier is to this? Fear. If I ask that question, kids, if you ask this question, I know what you think. You're going to be pulling weeds for a month, right? That's what you think. You see the dishes on the counter? Don't ask the question. Actually, you want to know when you should ask the question? When you see there's a need. You know what the need is, but asking the question suddenly gets their attention. What can I do to help? My life, for your life, for our life. What if the church did this? Everything that I am, all my resources, all my talent, all my love, everything that I am for this place. You know, there's these little things called sign me up cards. You know what those are? How can I help? Did you know that we have somebody this morning? I'm not going to point them out because I don't want to embarrass them. You're here at like 7 o'clock this morning. This young lady with her daughter was putting together every single table in that room for a bunch of food that was going to be put on it for people that needed it. And they are like the joy of the week for me when I come to church on that morning and at about 7:30, these two walk in the door and that little girl looks at me and she goes, "Hi, Pastor Connie." She left that room, went downstairs and made all the coffee for you guys to drink. She basically, without even asking the question, just said, "What can I do to help?" I'm so grateful for her. I'm so grateful for Nick Petrak. You know, come up and just say, "This is my talent. You know what I'm going to do? What can I do to help? What can I do to help?" Did you know who did this best? Invite the worship team up. Romans chapter 5. When we were utterly what? Helpless. Helpless. When you were at your lowest point and saying, "I need help," in the nick of time, Christ came in just the right time and died for us sinners. It's as if in that moment, God literally said, "I see you. What can I do to help?" You imagine Jesus, hey, walking into God the Father in the heavenlies, right hand of the throne of the Father, and Jesus says, "Hey, Lord, like, I see all these broken people down there. I see what's going on down there. I see your heart breaking. I see what's going on in your economy. What can I do to help?" Oh, you shouldn't ask that question, Jesus. No, what can I do to help? Well, it's going to cost you your life. It's going to cost you everything. Like in a real, like real life, like, yeah, I'm going to make you a son of mine. I'm going to make you a physical flesh. I'm going to give you all power and authority from me into you. And when I send you down there, I am going to actually make you and allow you and give you the blessing of giving your life for people who need you. He says, now, most people would not be willing to die for an upright person. So someone might perhaps actually die or be willing to die for a person who is especially good. Anybody in here especially good? I don't think anybody is especially good. Thank goodness that no one in here is especially good, because Jesus didn't die only for the especially good people. He actually died for the people who were no good. People who literally looked at that list, the gospel and family, and said, "Fail, fail, fail, fail. We're failures. We can't do it. And he said, it's okay. I'm going to send my son because I know you need my help. Don't try to remove the tension of your family. It will never go away. Manage it with the love of Christ. Manage it with the sacrifice of Jesus. Manage it with the cross. Manage it with humility and patience and kindness. And above all, actually put on love and do it for people. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were what? Helpless sinners, right? Brennan Manning said it this way, this book that we're reading right now. It says, his love, which called us into existence, calls us to come out of self-hatred and to step into his truth. Come to me now, Jesus says. Acknowledge and accept that who I want to be for you, not something you have to become. I'm going to be for you, a savior. Boundless compassion, infinite patience, unbearable forgiveness, and love that keeps no score of any wrongs. Quit projecting onto me your own feelings about you and yourself. At this moment, your life is a bruised reed, but don't worry, I will not crush it. A smoldering wick, I will not quench it. And this last line is so good. You are in a safe place. Safe place. Here's your application for the week. At just the right time in somebody's life, will you step in and say, what can I do to help? God will give you the keys to the kingdom when you ask that question. You will look more like Jesus with that one question than any other time. What can I do to help? My life, all of me, for all of you,